So I think the title is why the difference between tzedakah and charity. So that is what I decided to, you know, to name it. And with that in mind, we'll just kind of dispel that issue right away, and then we'll head into the rest of the things we'd like to talk about. So, okay. So I just put here a just the definition of charity. What is the definition of charity? So to voluntarily give of help, typically in the form of money, to those in need. So there is a key word there that is then left out of the word tzedakah, right? The key word in that definition that we're going to sort of cross out right now is the word voluntarily, right? Voluntarily means that I don't have to do it. The word tzedakah, what is the root of the word tzedakah? So if you take the shoresh, tzedek, right? Tzedek is not charity, rather it means justice or being just. So what does that mean? What does that have to do with the idea of tzedakah? That part of the tzedakah, part of the appropriate way for me to handle the money is for me to dispense it in the ways that we have, that we are commanded to, which includes a significant amount of tzedakah. Now, how much is significant and to whom should that go or to where should that go? So those are some of the topics that I'd like to talk about. But just as a story of introduction, just to realize that we're sort of dealing with a difficult thing. Well, first, the pasuk tells us, the pasuk of tzedakah in the Torah itself, I didn't put it on the source sheet, but the pasuk says that you shouldn't clench your fist, rather you should give the money out to whomever. So the Vilna Gaon pointed out that what is the difference between a clenched fist and an open hand, other than to give, etc. When you have a clenched fist, all your fingers are the same size. When you open your hand, so all your fingers are different sizes, which means that there might be different amounts, and that the mitzvah of tzedakah is very subjective. That it's subjective in where it's going to go. It's subjective, and both on whom the people are requesting as well as the person that is giving. People have the right to make their own personal decisions with regards to their tzedakah. But then one other story. The story is about Rav Naftali of Rupshitz. Now, when a rebbe talks like this, I'm not sure what to do with it. I don't have a memory that goes all the way back. But he told the story that when he was learning with the malach, when he was in his mother's womb, so he was learning with the malach, and they're getting towards the end. You know, he knows that his time is soon coming up. And they're discussing, and these are the really big questions that I just want to give you a couple of answers to before you leave. So number one, big question is, as the pasuk tells us, that we praise Abraham for being, when he said, Anochi afar ve'efer, that I am dust and I am ashes, right? That Abraham said, I'm a lowly person. But yet a person is also supposed to say, Bishvili nivra ha'olam, right? According to, for me, the entire world was created just for me. And I'll give you another big conflict, and that's where we're going to get into the realm of tzedakah. On one hand, it says that the one way to preserve money, the ultimate salt for money, meaning in order to preserve money, the ultimate salt is to give it all away for tzedakah. So then eventually you understand that that's the best investment because we have emuna that that's going to come back to us. On the other hand, we are capped, as we'll get to shortly. There is a cap that halakha puts on us of saying one should not give out more than a fifth. So there's another conflict. So he says, so I remember as a minus young boy saying, okay, well, what's the answer? But the next thing I knew, I hear Mazel Tov, and it's a boy. So I was born. I never got the answer to that question. So part of what he is trying to tell is that it's sort of an unanswerable question, but a question that one develops over the course of life. How does one figure out the balance between those two sides? So besides the pasuk, besides the Torah giving us specific verses about the mitzvah of tzedakah and commanding that this is something that you would need to do, there is perhaps a broader issue with regards to chesed in general, kindness in general. What are we attempting to accomplish other than the specific idea of I'm helping this person, I'm giving him tzedakah, I'm helping this person with their food, I'm driving this person where they need to be driven. Right, what else, what are we attempting to do with Bikur Cholim, with visiting the sick, or visiting, consoling the mourner, etc. So there is a Gemara, this is source number two, where the Talmud tells us, source number one is, Achar Hashem Elokeichem Tileichu, V'yatzotirao, that one should follow the way in Hashem. So the Talmud has a discussion about that in Tractate Sotah. What does that mean? What does it mean? There's English on the bottom. But what does it mean that after I should follow the ways of Hashem? Is a person really able to follow the Shekhinah? Is a person really able to follow the Divine Presence? Does the verse also not tell us that God is like an all-consuming fire? The Shekhinah is an all-consuming fire. If I attempt to get too close to the fire, so I'll get burnt. So what does that mean that I'm supposed to follow God? So rather, the Talmud continues, Ella halach achar midosav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rather, what it means is, I want it to follow, it's what it's supposed to follow, the traits of Hashem. Mahu maldish arumim, just as God, so to speak, clothes the naked, as it gives an example of Hashem giving the clothing to Adam and Chava, so too you are supposed to clothe the naked. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God visits the sick, as we see that Hashem visited Abraham, so too you should visit the sick. And Hashem also, what's the other example? Hashem also consoled the mourners, and so too you should go ahead and console the mourners. So our chesed is not just a commandment that we're supposed to do, but it is a way of following in the ways of Hashem, and filling the world with God's holiness. I have a friend, Rabbi Daniel Feldman, who has written two books in English. If you want to get them, some of the technical books on the laws of Chesed. One is on the laws of interpersonal relationship, and then he has one on the laws of Chesed. So he entitled the ones on the laws of Chesed "Divine Footsteps." Right, because we are following in the way, Achar Hashem Teleth, we are following in the ways of Hashem. So now all of that is a matter of introduction. So now let's get into some of the halachos. And again, halachos, as we'll see, is not going to really define anything completely specific, but I think we get some guidelines about how we're supposed to feel about this mitzvah, and what is emphasized, what is not so emphasized, etc. So the Shulchan Aruch, actually there's 10 chapters in the Shulchan Aruch, 10 or so chapters about the laws of Tzedakah. It's a pretty detailed thing, but you're still left kind of hanging at the end. So it says, Shir Nisinah, so how much is one supposed to do? So we may have heard this idea. Im yadum ateges yitin kefit tzarachaniyim. If your hand is able to, if you're able to afford it, you should give whatever the ani needs. So what does it mean? What does the ani, the poor person, what do they need? So the Gemara, it seems to imply, actually gives stories to this effect of whatever they're missing. That if they, and in fact, if they used to have a limo and a driver, so we should be responsible to cover their limo and a driver. In theory, some decisors say, in theory, even if you don't have a limo and a driver, still, that's what they're used to, so what is supposed to fulfill that? Now, in reality, we don't do that. There's a... For several reasons. One of them, there are some authorities that sort of knock that down a little bit for various reasons. But besides that, it's not really so practical in terms of when we talk about triage within the community. But it is sort of held up as a standard. It's up there as, in theory, this is what we really want to do. And that's sort of the opening of the list of laws. So let's say you can't do that, the Shulchan Aruch continues. If you're not able to afford that, yitain ad chomish nechasov, one-fifth of your nechasim, one-fifth of your assets. Mitzvah min mufchar, that is the ideal. So, actually, we'll mention what does that mean of your assets, but that's really good, one-fifth. Ba'achad ba'asara midah beinonis, and one-tenth is considered a midah beinonis. So how many of us have heard of this concept of giving one-tenth, right? That's... It got around, okay? That's the idea of Meister Ksuffin is the way it's called. There's perhaps even some source for that in the Torah itself. There's probably the understand that as being a minute, as being a custom of giving one-tenth, but I think it is for a general community that is an ideal. Now, what does that mean? So let's hold off on that question a little bit. If you give less than that, so ayin ra, it's not so good. So in this fifth that we say, so shana rishona mehakeren mikam ve'ilach chomesh asharviach b'chol shana. So what does that mean? So your first year, you give, a person has been living under a rock, right, and they never heard this, and now all of a sudden, oh, look at that, there's a mitzvah in the Torah called tzedakah. So how much should I give? So take all of your assets and cut out one-fifth of that. Okay, so that's year one. After that, it's coming off of the profit. That's the understanding. And the same thing would be for a tenth. Okay. Next, comments the Ramah. And the Shulchan Aruch, maybe one of you we could do a whole idea of what the Shulchan Aruch is. But the Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law, is actually two books that were smushed together. Right? There is the Mechaber, which is Rav Yosef Karo, writing in Tzfat, him thinking that he's writing for all of the Jews, but in reality writing for the Sephardim. And then there is the Ramah, Rav Moshe Israelis, living in Krakow, who inserts his own comments, which pretty much defeated the whole purpose of what Rav Yosef Karo was attempting to do. He was attempting to write a book for all of Chal Yisrael, and the Ramah was pretty much saying, yeah, but all of us, we're not going to do all those things. So sometimes he is changing what he's arguing on the Machaber, and sometimes he's just sort of adding in a couple of details here and there. So what's he doing here? He says, either way, he's adding in, that a person shouldn't add more than a fifth, because then he's going to find himself on the other side of the tzedakah exchange, and that a person shouldn't do. So there are commentaries on this Shulchan Aruch that said, yeah, that's if you're like only of regular wealth, regular means. But if you're really, really wealthy, so then you have the right to even give more than a fifth. So my Rebbe in Yeshiva that I learned with for several years, Rav Herschel Schaffner, so he was Kozitz, and he said, yeah, but I'm really wealthy. I live in, I teach in Yeshiva, I live in a nice apartment, and I have one car. That's all you need. So he said, I give more than a fifth. Right, so that's somewhat subjective as to what that would be, but in theory, one perhaps could even go above that. And then he says it's only during your lifetime, but if it's after one's death, so when it's, well, not after, you could assign after your death, etc. And then we add in, v'ein, this is an important law in terms of the 110, v'ein la'asos mi meister shalo davar mitzvah, the last line here, could go nerus lebeis haknesses, oshar davar mitzvah, rakit nenu la'anid. And one cannot do with this meister, right, when you're spending this 110, so what can it go for? So that's a very important question, especially for those of us that are paying day school tuition. Right? That's a very important question. What counts towards the Maaseh Mitzvah? It says, well, if it's for a Dvar Mitzvah, suggests the Ramah, it doesn't count. And what's his example of a Dvar Mitzvah? If you're giving, if you're paying for candles for the shul, which was like a really big deal back in the day. That was one of the, as we say in the Yom Kippur Tefillah, it talked about people providing the candles for the shul. That was a significant issue. So if that's what you're doing, so then that doesn't count. So does that mean that we're now, and he says only give it to aniyim, now only give it to poor people. So where does that leave institutions? Right. So what? There's a couple of questions. What about a school that I'm sending my children to? Right. So does that count as tzedakah? And what about the shul that I'm a member in? The synagogue that I'm a member in. Does that count? And maybe the synagogue. And what about the membership versus the kolidre appeal? Right. Are there going to be a distinction between those two items? So I'll try to get back to. Don't let me not get back to that. But that is it. But the Ramah right away says here, not for a Dvar Mitzvah, which seems perhaps to exclude those things. Or does it? Maybe it only excludes the pair of tefillin that I'm purchasing, or the lulav and etzog that I'm purchasing. But I'm giving to an institution, maybe it's different. So let's hold that. Let's hold that thought. One other line here from the Shulchan Aruch. So the Shulchan Aruch a little bit later on says, in terms of the individual ani. So a person shows up at my door and says, "Hi, I have to do an operation for my child. I need $50,000. So how much of that am I responsible to give?" And that's the way that's like extreme dai matzura. That's not just I need my limo and my driver that I always used to have when I was really wealthy. But if I need, so is that my responsibility? So the Ramah says here, well, no, there is a person in the city, in theory, that is supposed to be the Gabbai Tzedakah. And that's the responsibility on him. So it's the responsibility on the community as a whole to attempt to go in and do that. So I don't necessarily have to, anybody who shows up, I don't have to fulfill all of their wishes. I can assume that they're going to go around the city. Now, we generally don't have today a one Gabbai Tzedakah. This concept of going to the, going and knocking on doors, etc., seems to have replaced that. There is some extent, there's the rabbi that has his discretionary fund, etc., but part of that still is going to individuals.
GoFundMe.
There is GoFundMe. Or other assorted types of websites, right? But the responsibility is still a combined, it's still a crowd, whether it's crowdsourcing online or the crowdsourcing from going up and down the block, right? It's still considered crowdsourcing. He says that one is not responsible to do that unless there's nobody else. Unless there's nobody else, so then perhaps the responsibility would fall back on me. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm always suspicious of the GoFundMes for medical bills, because I've actually been in a situation where I discovered we were very grateful to receive, be the beneficiaries of the hospital fund, right? It turns out that the Boston Children's Hospital has a fund, and if you really can't afford what your kid needs, we got what we need taken care of by the hospital. So whenever I see those GoFundMes, I have the same thought. Did you ask the hospital? Did you talk to the people? It's the same. Did you go to the, what's his name, the Balsack, right?
That's already set up, right?
Right. Did you check with the people that are already here to do that, or are you just knocking on doors first?
Okay. I know that. Yes. These are some of the questions.
Yes, and that goes back to the funding institution.
Yeah, it's not like.
No, for sure.
The charity still has to be funded.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, but sometimes people are entitled in a nice way to serve goods and services that society provides. So isn't it better to help them get into those resources rather than, you know, I should take it out of my pocket and maybe I should use my money differently?
Sure. So the questioning of people that come to your door, I will, that's on page 2. Yeah, so we'll get to that.
Okay. But it raises another question, which I think is interesting, in that in our society, we are taxed, and a lot of the taxes that we pay go to fund hospitals and other institutions to provide services that you can go to and so on. So is our taxes, at least to the extent that it goes to charitable causes or to poor people, because this is defined as funding poor people.
Yeah. So I think
it's not voluntary.
Right.
It's
some have made that point. That I'm paying more than 10% to taxes. So perhaps not all 10% is going to cover welfare. Some of it is going to pay for the traffic light, right? That which I'm benefiting from. So, but can I count taxes towards that? So some have raised that point, especially even though it's not optional. I did vote for elected officials who have decided that that's what I'm going to do. That's the good way. So if you're part of a community, if you lived in Slutsk in the year whatever, and the city, the Jewish community together decided that everybody's going to have to pay X amount of money and we're going to do that towards tzedakah, so then one would have a real claim that's my tzedakah money. That's officially what it's being collected for. Let's stick on this Meiser issue for a second. We'll just skip source 5 and go to source 6. But in source 6, there the Mechaber seems to backtrack somewhat and say that the mitzvah states akneses adifim mitzvah tzedakah. That the mitzvah of giving to a shul actually perhaps has precedence over giving tzedakah, unless it's somebody that some kind of has an urgent need right at that point. If somebody is ill at that point, needs money right at that point, so then maybe that would take precedence over the shul. But not, so how does one square that with the idea that we mentioned before that says that, it's for a bar mitzvah, it doesn't count. It doesn't count. So there's, I think, a couple of different approaches to resolve these types of issues. And I'll give you, I'll try to lay some things out, and then I'll tell you what I, my general, what I generally go with. And that is, when it comes to the, first of all, when it comes to what it was talking about there in terms of paying for the candles, that's if a person makes a commitment outside of their tzedakah obligation. A person, that's probably the way to resolve that for a month. If a person said, I'm hereby, this is what I'm giving, I'm giving this. So that's his requirement, and he didn't have in mind to say, that's part of my tzedakah. If he had in mind, and I'm giving this as part of my tzedakah contribution to the shul, so then that perhaps would be a different story. But without saying that, without making that type of accommodation, so that's like something that you personally need. So a person personally needs for, the person who needs lulav, an etrog, whatever it is that they need over the course of the year for their Jewish rituals, that's not tzedakah, that's for themselves. But if it's something that they are giving towards an institution saying, I hereby want to count this as my tzedakah money, so then that is doable, unless it's something that they're required to do. Now you start getting, I don't know if we have any Vestal board members in the room here right now, but now you get into that question of, is one required to pay membership in a synagogue, or is that a voluntary thing to pay membership to a synagogue? Could a person claim, oh, I don't want to pay this, I'm going to give more, right? So where does that, is a per, you know, if, again, if you went to, in Europe 150 years ago, you were required, otherwise you were out, otherwise you weren't part of the community. Now, you know, some might give you a dirty look, you know, but no one's going to tell you, sorry, you're not welcome here in synagogue. I don't, you know, maybe they will. I hope they don't. Right? But it's not necessarily obligatory in the same sense that it was. So that's somewhat borderline.
People
about,
can get a discount if people can't afford it. They can request
right.
their status.
Yeah. Right, right. Well, I think the same thing would exist back in the day. But can I say, well, that I'm giving to an institution that I'm not obligated to do. But you are and you're not. But
you're,
yeah.
If you're not obligated to do it, and everybody takes that attitude, how do you open the doors? How do you put the lights on? How do you run a building 24/7?
No,
so that they're stuck.
I asked for tzedakah, meaning as opposed to a tax that I'm imposing on the community, I'm requesting donations from the community.
Okay, and what if those donations do not rise to the level of enabling you to open the
door?
Well,
you have a problem, obviously. But you're doing it anyways.
You pass around the plate and you hope that people put money in.
One second. I imagine Bethelel is doing that also. Bethelel has a membership fee, and they also have a Kol Nidre appeal, and they also have your site donations, and they also have, right? So you are already mixing those two. I think most people would argue that, oh, yeah, a Kol Nidre appeal, assuming you said, this is part of my tzedakah thing, that for sure could count as my tzedakah. The membership issue is a little bit more dicey because one could claim that, no, that's an obligatory thing. Maybe. It depends on the sociological nature of the community. Yes?
Is there a difference between donating tzedakah to a poor person as opposed to donating to an institution?
Yeah, so it's an excellent question. What I read around, I think they are both considered tzedakah. We've assumed today, despite that what the Ramah seems to imply not, we assume today that it is, and that they are considered equivalent, but the poor people still need to be taken care of. I mean, there still is a responsibility on the community to see to it that both issues are taken care of. But in terms of a person saying, am I fulfilling my mitzvah of tzedakah by giving money to a shul? So I think most authorities assume that, yes, that would be the issue today. Yeah.
I mean, giving money indirectly to the poor person is preferable, according to Rambam, because you're not embarrassing the poor person. You don't know his identity. You don't know your identity.
So that issue in terms of identity and taking credit, that's the last thing. I do want to get to that, but that's certainly on the list. So beyond that, what about school tuition? So I have a responsibility. I have to make sure that my kids learn Torah, and I have to make sure that they to get a secular education. So that is my responsibility. So it's Rav Moshe Feinstein, writing the last century, has a pretty, you know, of millions and millions of dollars question, and he assumed that that tuition probably does not count for your Meitzer money in terms of counting for your attendance. But I think there is a big thing that one has to add on, is that while it might not count as Meitzer, I think it is what I call Meitzer deductible. Right? But it is a required expense. So the idea of giving one tenth is generally after your needs are taken care of. It's really whatever is left. So whatever
we have to pay teachers.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, you have to pay teachers and I have to educate my kids. So they go together. So one could say, well, I have my requirements for living. I have to pay taxes, so taxes are Meitzer deductible. It's never left after that. And then there's other responsibilities that I have. So if I want to say, well, the food that I spend a month and my housing and my all that stuff, so you're not left with so much to take one tenth out of. Except that one says, yeah, if I don't have to live in a beautiful house in Lower Merion, I could live someplace else, right? So one has to, so as we mentioned before, you're going to get into some touchy issues here. Yeah, that's a bit of a question, right? Where do I say that this is a luxury versus this is a requirement, right? That's sort of the question. In theory, I would say anything that is required is Meitzer deductible. So schooling is Meitzer deductible. That's a requirement. Now I could say, well, I could send them to public school, right? Right. Except I also have a responsibility for teaching them Torah, and that's, you know, me, or I'm paying someone else to do it. That's part of my responsibility as a parent, right? And then there, so that's that whatever is left over schlucko could even claim, look, I have to take a vacation. I have to. Otherwise, I won't be able to do well.
There's another session on mental health, right?
Okay. Right. All right. So where one draws that line in terms of what I have to do versus this is a luxury, I think that's the Meisser line as well. That's what I try to go by and try to advise people.
So,
yes.
For example, you might need a car to get to your job.
Yes.
You need a car. You need four wheels that run.
Right.
You don't need a BMW.
Right.
So where do you draw that line
right.
between the car payment that's three times what
yes.
could it move to be?
So you're really getting into then a subjective issue. Yeah. And the truth is nobody is looking over your shoulder. It's really between a person and their spouse and Hashem, you know, as to what they're paying. Mm-hmm. But that in terms of guidelines, what I would advise, you know, it is interesting that I get, you know, people ask this question somewhat regularly of rabbis. So what counts as Meisser? They're very interested in that. I remember when I was I mentioned before I learned by Rav Schechter. So he commented that when he was in yeshiva, after one of the boys got married and they were still in kollel or in yeshiva, so the mashgiach would come over to them and he would tell them, I'm forgetting what one of the things was. Oh, I think number one is make sure you still take your wife out on dates. I think that was one. I'm not sure though. But the second one was if you're living off of your in-laws or parents, right, you should not be taking off Meisser. You should not be paying one-tenth, because then you're paying one-tenth of their money, not one-tenth of your money. It's only once that you're once you're on your own. So, but you should train yourself to give some tzedakah already at that point. I mean, that I think parents and in-laws would say, yeah, you should be giving some, and certainly as one moves along, one should get into that practice of trying to take off a tenth. Like for mitzvah presents, right, there, right, that's one-tenth, that's certainly appropriate for them to take one-tenth of their money back. Yeah, okay. So that's sort of issue one, the issue of how much and for what. Now, to whom? So there is a, what are we doing here? I was having some time here. So you got to the question before of are people doing enough in order to cover themselves before they're going and asking for money. So there is a sort of unrelated statement in the Talmud. There is a mission in the Sefer Bavli Mitzvah. And it talks about the mitzvah of helping somebody load up their animal. That if the animal loses its bundle, so and you're there. So the Torah actually says, go and help them reload their animal. So the Mishnah makes a comment that right in the middle of that first line there, halach v'yashavlo, if the guy sits down and says, listen, I don't have a mitzvah, you have a mitzvah, right? It's my donkey that fell, but you have a mitzvah to put it back up. So why don't you take care of it, and you'll get a lot of schar, and I'll have a nice coffee on the side. So would that be okay? So the Gemara, the Mishnah comments, imritzonka lifrok, so then you would be pater. Why? Because it says, azos tazo imo, that you're supposed to help him, right? You're supposed to help with him, not that you're going to do all the work, and he's going to be able to sit on the side. So the Kli Yakar is a commentary on the page of the Mikros Gedolos in a Chumash. A Chumash of all the commentaries in it. So the Kli Yakar is one of those commentaries of Shlomo Ephraim Lunshitz. So he makes the comment, someone must have been bothering him in his town. He was actually the Rav of Prague, which is close to, I have an ancestor, Bechester Landau, who was the Rav of Prague. So he was a little bit before him. But he says, Mikan Shuva al Miksas Aniyim, right, this is a answer to some of the poor people, b'nei aminu, hamatilim es achmacham al atzibur ve'inam rotim lasos b'shul malacha. Right, these are people that are, to quote, a congresswoman, right, unwilling to work. Right, that's what's being quoted from this pasuk. If you're unwilling to work, so then you're not responsible to help them. In b'yodim lasos b'ezim malacha u'ezadavar achar shabo yuchol lahavi schar ravon beitam, that they'd be able to bring it in themselves. V'korim teger, and then they start protesting, they start getting really upset if you don't give them money. Right? Well, you can go ahead and get a job and do the things that you're supposed to do. So he's extending it not just in the realm of helping somebody load up their animal, but also in the realm of tzedakah. If a person is not willing to do their part, so then you're not required to help them. Now, you're getting into some dicey territory there, because what do you mean? Go get a job. What is the problem? Why are you knocking on my door, etc.? So, first of all, I should have actually put on the bio. There is a local tzedakah organization that I have really the privilege of being involved in. It's called Chasdei Eliyahu. If you ever, I don't know. I see some nods. Okay, good. We're actually losing the person who ran it for many years. His name is Lisa Ekman. So they're moving, and we found somebody else to take. They're moving. They got to Columbus, Ohio. We actually found somebody who's going to be taking up the bulk of her work. If anybody's interested, really provides money for local poor people. Really, people in within 3-4 miles of this place, there are people that receive money from that institution. If you want more information, please, we can talk after the time. But we've had, this is obviously a discussion. I am officially the rabbinic authority for that organization. And that's one of the questions. What could they do? And it's something that takes, it's a real challenging thing to try to make assessments on other people. Are they really doing enough? Lisa, whose judgment I trust immensely, often say that they're doing all they can. Like, they are. Not everybody is capable of holding jobs that allows them then to do all the things that are necessary in order to financially make it here. So that's something to keep in mind. And there's another important Dvar Torah that I once heard from, Vital Rudzinski, who's a Rav in Muncie. He has thousands of stuff online. I'm like a closet, I'm a virtual chassid of his. I only listen to things online. But he made the comment once that the verse tells us, a verse that we all know, "Be'ahavta l'reacha kamocha," that one should love their fellow as themselves. So that's, first of all, that according to halacha, that's not true, right? According to halacha, if there's one cup of water, right, and only one of us will be able to survive, so what are we supposed to do? We assume that you should drink, if it's your cup of water, you should drink it, and your life comes first. So what does it mean, v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, love him as yourself, right? He should make that argument and say, what do you mean? I'm like you, right? So I should get the water, but you should love me like you. So he suggested that what is the mitzvah of the v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha? Not necessarily to treat the other person like you would treat yourself, but to question the other person like you would question yourself. Right? That if I'm going to judge another person, a person knocks on your door and says, hi, I need money. So there are some legitimate questions, perhaps, you know, like the hospital might have a fund to help you cover these things, right? That might be a legitimate question, but perhaps at that moment it's not the appropriate time to ask them about, you know, why did you invest in this and you didn't invest in that, right? Especially at a lower level when they're coming and asking for whatever they're asking for and they're knocking on your door, right? So all of those investigations are not, I don't know if I want to say not necessary, but they're, you know, I would say Donald Kav's foot. So the idea of judging people favorably, I think, certainly exists at that time. Yeah?
The question, is the presumption that the recipient is Jewish?
The assumption of this class at this point, I guess, is that they, I don't know. I don't think so. I think there is an idea of, actually it's the next source about who comes first in precedence, so we're sort of in the family. We would go first, but I think a person could give money to a non-Jewish organization and still count it as their Meitzer money. It's just a question of hierarchy, what comes first on the list. Okay, so that is the Kli Yakar's idea. So then we get to source number 9. Source number 9 is the section in Shulchan Aruch, in the Code of Jewish Law, where it gives you that hierarchy about who comes first on the list. So who comes first on the list? Your mishpacha. Mishpacha comes first on the list. So that, so that's another thing that perhaps one can claim. You know, one is only, the Talmud actually has a law that you're only responsible to support your children until they're like 6. So that's a lot of Meister money that I'm spending on my kids, right, in order to make sure that they eat. So that is, you generally don't assume that way, to mark off Meister money in that in that way, right? But the idea of helping family members is important. There is in one of the Maggid books, one of Pesach Kron's story book, he tells the story of the Rebbe who went to one of his Hasidim and says, I know a person who needs a lot, needs some help paying their rent this month. They need $1,000 to help their rent. So the Hasid is at work and the Rebbe came to visit him. Sure, by all means, who should I make the check out to? Your Shlomo Schwartz, make it out to Yaakov Schwartz. Yaakov Schwartz is his brother, right? He's giving it, sometimes you don't recognize that the people closest to you are really in need of that money, and the idea of charity and chesed and kindness start at home. That's an important important concept that I think you often, I don't know all of you, but you know, in my experience, many people have sometimes lose track of. But then he goes down the list, the idea of first the people on the Beso, and then the Ani Iro, and the Ani Iro come before the Ani of another city, right? The people of your house, your extended family, they come before the other people of your city, and the people of your city come before the people of another city. And then the line that I have underlined there is also the Yoshvei Eretz Yisrael, Kodmin L'Yoshvei Chutzlaretz, and the people in Israel have precedence over the people in Chutzlaretz, outside the land of Israel. Now there's a significant debate as to, okay, where, who, where does that go? How high on the list do you bump the people of Israel? So
they go above your son or
brother. Right, do they go above your family? Right, right. So there is one particular person who said, oh yeah, the people in Israel, they go all the way up. That happens to be Rav Kook, right? So Rav Kook, in his one of his farm writes that way. He says, yeah, that's what it means. It means it goes all the way up. Most assume not that way. Most assume that when you have a hierarchy of helping someone in Chicago versus helping somebody in Yerushalayim, so you would go towards Yerushalayim rather than heading towards Chicago. But there is a further question that now comes into very much into the fore today of, okay, what is Irka? What is your city? Is your city Lower Merion? Is your city Philadelphia? Is your city the institutions that you're connected to? Mm-hmm. So one of my, I quoted him with Yitzhak Rav Shapter, he makes the comment that he lives in Washington Heights, but his kid, he's very, you know, he goes and speaks in Teaneck in New Jersey all the time. So he's much more connected to the New Jersey community than he is to some institutions that might be closer to his home. So in today, or for instance, many people have, you know, their children go and learn in the yeshiva in Israel, or I've learned in the yeshiva in Israel. So where does the yeshiva that I learned in Israel, does that have precedence over perhaps the yeshiva even in Philadelphia that don't really have anything that have anything to do with? So that is sort of like a question out there. His assumption, the halacha, is that, yeah, what Ani Irka means, what the poor people of your city mean, is the poor people that you're associated with. That those people, that your associated people, which might not necessarily mean your city, is going to gain precedence over other organizations or other people that perhaps are even in your city, but not outward. On the other hand, I had another teacher. He actually grew up in Philadelphia, Rabbi Ozer Glickman, old school Philadelphia guy. And unfortunately, he passed away very suddenly a year or two ago. But yeah, he still has family here living in Philadelphia. He wrote an article. In fact, his entire book, there's a series called the Orthodox Forum series where they collect a bunch of people every year. They all write on a very important topic and write, there's like 10 papers that are given. Everybody gets together and they talk about it and it gets published in the book. So a couple of years ago, the title, the topic was about tzedakah, the idea of philanthropy today. And he wrote an article entitled, as you can tell what it means, Think Local, Act Global. Right, and what is this dealing with this question of what is considered local and what is considered global in today's world? And he concludes actually somewhat to the other side, saying that yes, it's very easy to get drawn into the idea of, oh yeah, I'm very connected to things all over the world, but it would be quite an embarrassment, it would be quite a bizayon if the people in your own city aren't taken care of. So even though you, oh well, I don't really have anything to do with those people in my city. Oh, well, maybe you should have something to do with those people in your city. So that balance is not something that's resolved. And again, like most things in Hilchos Tzedakah, different people's netios, different people's attitudes are perhaps going to take them in different directions as to how to resolve those issues. Again, those two, no fingers are the same length, and those people are alike with this issue. Then I get to one more topic. But yes, you want to say something?
This thing to talk about it, poor.
Yeah.
So we know that there are different degrees of poverty.
Right. Right.
And how does that?
Right. So
factor in? So extreme poverty in the undeveloped world may be something that you don't see in the city of Philadelphia, even among the poorest there. So how does that come?
Right. That's a good question. This goes back to some of what we talked about earlier, the idea of daimachzorot, making up for what a certain person is is missing out on. So he sort of says, yeah, but come on, let's get real. That's not going to qualify. So the source that we skipped from the Bach is actually found in the laws of Matanos Levyonim, giving to the poor on Purim, that happens to be where he made this comment. And he talks about the idea of, is it better to give to 100 people or to one person? You may have heard the idea of giving $100 to 100 people, $1 to 100 people is better than giving $100 to one person, because of the idea that it breeds tzedakah, breeds righteousness. But he says much more practically, because you're going to help more people that way. Okay, but what if you're not? I mean, giving out $1 to 100 people perhaps doesn't help as much as you would do it. So he's trying to kind of strike that balance. His assumption is that you'll be able to help more people. So I think he's trying to get to the point of the people that need help. Now you're going to say, well, am I going to balance somebody who's desperate versus somebody who's not? He talks about the line he gives is, what's the word I'm looking for? The person who gives out to 100 people will provide life to 100 people. That's his language. So I think that's sort of where you're looking for, the people that need the money to continue to live. I think that's where you're looking for it. And I'm not going to say, oh, well, this person has nothing across the world. Well, no, I think if you're in Ircha and in your city and you have the people that that really need the money, I think that's probably where family members / city people that needed to get by basic necessities, I think that's probably the goal over somebody who's desperately poor that I don't see far with, I think. Okay. Now, one more issue, which is actually when I was asked about this topic, it was someone was asked in the way of this idea of putting in your name on buildings. Is that like a good idea? Yeah. Not a good idea. Unless, my kids will go to Torah Academy, which is now Hasty Torah Academy.
I just saw that.
Right. So it is now officially CTA. So is that good or not good? Is that an appropriate thing or not? So Dan alluded to before the hierarchy of tzedakah in terms of the best is if nobody knows, best is if someone's job, but the best is if nobody, there's
anonymous Torah.
Right. So one second. So when the Rambam is giving you that hierarchy, he's really referring to giving to a poor person, because the poor person doesn't want to be embarrassed by seeing the person that actually gave him that money, right? That is the assumption that one is going with there. But when it comes to institutions, so institutions want to be associated with that name, right? It is helpful to the institution to be going by that name. So that doesn't necessarily make it appropriate for the donor. That just means that it's in the interest of the school. But is that good or is that not good? So again, one more source in the Shulchan Aruch, number 11, this is the end of that list of the Rambam, where he's quoting that, is the least is that you give it to Eitzim, that you give it like in a bad way. Okay. But then the Ramah steps in. This is the Ramosha Issos that, like, give and take. He says, this is all, if you make him really feel bad, that's even worse. But then he says at the end, here the underlying part, Mi shemaktish davar l'tzaka, mutter lo shiyichtov shemo alav, shehelo zicharo. That if it is something that he is sanctified for tzedakah, it is permissible to put his name on it, so it will be remembered. V'roi la'toskein. He concludes by saying v'roi la'toskein, which means it is appropriate to do so. So he's giving it his stamp of approval. Now, why is he giving it a stamp of approval? So he has the source there. It's the Tshuva Rashba. The Rashba lived in Barcelona. He passed away in the early 1300s. He was not just the Rav of Barcelona. He was really the Rav of Spain. He got some of the stories about him. But he has, I think, 11 volumes of responsa that have like 1,000 each, which I can't even imagine how that happened living in Europe in the 1300s. Thousands and thousands and thousands of responsa, one of them being on this question, where he was sent the question of, somebody wants to give money to our shul and put his name on it, and we don't think it's right. What do you think, Rashba? To which he starts off by saying, well, I don't know. I mean, the shul that I daven in is named after somebody, so I guess it's okay. And he ends up saying that, and he says that it's okay. Now, why does he say it's okay? So on the side of the page of the Shulchan Aruch, you look at the Shulchan Aruch, you have the middle, and then you have the payas going down the side, right? And then you have all the stuff on the bottom. So on the one side is the Taz. So the Taz says, Roy Latos, in the Nira Hatam, it seems to me the reason, meaning he's thinking it, he's not quoting the Rashi, I think the reason is, the that once you've given that money and your name is on it, they can't, the shul can't misappropriate it, right? Once you have it, it's your base medrash. So they can't decide, oh, we're going to make kindergarten classrooms out of it, because you dedicated for a specific purpose. That's his reason. Now, on the other side of the page of Shulchan Aruch is somebody called the Shacht, the Sisse Kohen, or Shachtai Kohen Rappaport. So this is actually not from the Shabbat, but he wrote two commentaries. One was his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, and then on the margins of the page, he has something called the Mekudas HaKetas, which is his argument against the Taz. The Taz is Turei Zahav, right? The poles of gold. And the Kudas HaKetef is, yeah, but the silver lining. I kind of like knocking him a little bit. So these are his arguments. And he says, in the beginning, I don't think the Taz actually saw the Rashba. First of all, and the truth is, the Taz himself says he didn't see the Rashba. He just says, I think the reasoning is the Taz. But I don't think he saw it, because if you saw the Rashba himself gives the reasons. What's his reasons that he gives? So I have the underlying parts here at the bottom. So that the person will have a good name, and to open the door for other people that are going to do the mitzvah.
Encouraging
right. So one is, I want my name on it because I want people to think good of me. That's okay. That's okay. That's number one. And the second thing is, of course, other people are going to say, oh, Mr. Schwartz gave that, well, I'm going to be able to give this. Right? And you'll be able to encourage other people to give. So the, right. So the Rashba is into it, and therefore it's okay. There's a story I heard, sort of one of these legends that I heard, that Mr. Reichman and Mr. Tannenbaum met each other. Those names sound familiar? There are two major Gavira, they both happen to live in Toronto. And they both gave tremendous amounts of tzedakah, supported, major institutions. But they once met each other, and Mr. Reichman asked Mr. Tannenbaum, again, this is a legend, could have happened, He says, I don't understand. I give a lot more tzedakah than you do, but yet I walk around Yerushalayim, and your name is on so many more buildings, right? Why is that? So he said, look, the truth, Mr. Tannenbaum said, the truth is, your kids are all religious, and my kids weren't all. And I want them, at least when they come back to Yerushalayim, they'll be able to see their names on the building, and therefore maybe that will perhaps give them further encouragement. I don't know if it's true, Shmuel should have said it, because maybe it's not, I'm not sure. But anyways, the message is certainly true, that not only does it, you'll be remembered for what is good, and other people perhaps will be encouraged to give, and hopefully it will inspire not just you and others, but also your children to remain committed to those institutions, to remember to remain committed to the mitzvah of tzedakah. So, stop here. I guess we still have a few more minutes for questions.
I don't know. It's more pushing towards this idea that you can put your name and so on in the tzad if it's not done.
I wonder about that, because the Rashba is quoted in the Beis Yosef. I believe the Beis Yosef does allude to it elsewhere. The Rashba sticking it in here is a little bit unclear why he's putting it in this particular spot. So, but the Rashba was a Svardi. I mean, he was writing for Svardim, and it's quoted, that Shuvah is quoted in the Beit Yosef. So, I'm not...
I don't remember, but when I was very young, most of the synagogues around us, which were Svardim, they had Rinati Sharim and Oil Chassidim and so on. But later on, it became Tfilah LeDavid, of the name of someone. And
so you're saying it was our influence? You're upset at the...
Maybe they copied it from the...
If they did, it's because it works, right?
You know that in Israel, there's some ancient synagogues, and they went to in Zem Jerusalem, and they had the pews from an ancient school, and they had names. This was given by Moshe ben Yaakov HaKohen. It was that the people were naming things after themselves in synagogues.
Yes, there is even, if you look in the Mishnah Midos, Mishnah Midos is where it gives the details of the second Beit HaMikdash, what the size and what was where. So it lists off the gates, and one of the gates is Shar Teddy, Tuf Dalad Yud, and it says Ve'eno, and it's the Mishnah gives the spots and gives what happened there. And it said, and there was no nothing happened there. That's what the Mishnah says. So one of the I heard this and I looked around for it. I remember knocking this apartment, but I think I did find it a little bit later on. It says, so what was it? So some guy named Teddy wanted to give money to this and that. So all right, we'll make a gate for you, and you'll be able to give money.
So that's interesting, right? Because inside the synagogue, even on land, in Sephardic synagogues, they would give the names, everything, small one and so on.
Yeah.
But it was not, again, 40 years ago, it was not the building. The building was general, but then it changed.
Right. My association with Sparta is that they give a lot of stuff for particular particular items.
Yeah,
okay, all right. Well, thank you everybody for coming.